Freedom Fiends. Hour one of the Freedom Fiends. Broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, where we alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenating radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it working, Dan? Can you feel it, Katie?
Oh, yes. We can feel it. I can feel it all the way over here.
And my name is Ben Stone, and this is the Freedom Fiends. And with me is Dan and Katie Green from the Greening Out podcast. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT NoGov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And I am down in the American South, and Dan and Katie, as usual, are in beautiful Scotland, where the weather is always stable.
Weather outside is weird.
It's like the best compliment you can give to Scottish weather.
It's stable.
It's not really though,
because sometimes it's just five seasons in a day here. You can have, you know, snow in the morning and sun at night. It's weird.
Well, you're close enough to the North Sea that there is a certain amount of randomness that can take place, right?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's like, I think I mentioned before, like how I always says, like, we never get extreme weather here. It's just, you know, often bad. Usually kind of what happens as well is if there's like a hurricane or something in like the US or something, we usually get the tail end of it, which means we get... It's nowhere near as bad. It means we get really bad wind and rain for like a week. That's about it. But like nowhere near what the people who actually went through a hurricane actually had to deal with.
Well, but the tail of a dragon is still the tail of a dragon. I mean, it's maybe not the teeth, but it's still the tail.
I'd rather have the tail than the teeth, put it that way.
Yeah. So let's see. Last time we were on the radio together, right at the end of the show, the reason I brought up weather, right at the end of the show, a pretty nasty weather front moved in up off the Gulf and just swallowed the area that I was in. And just in the minutes before the show started, right before we connected up here, another storm came through and just pounded the area that we're in. And it was like 15 minutes and boom, gone. There it is. And that's kind of how life is in the Gulf of Mississippi. I'm sorry, in the Gulf of Mexico, near Mississippi, Alabama border. These storms come up out of the Gulf of Mexico. And even the weather people have like almost no warning that they're coming, because they will just, as soon as the sun rises in the morning, and then at any particular time over the course of the day, a storm can just come right up out of the water. I mean, it's like, you know, the heat of the tropical sun warms that water in the Gulf of Mexico, and it can just create a storm at any particular moment. It's really unstable.
That sounds kind of worrying.
And that makes life fun in the South, though, you know?
Hey!
It's kind of strange, because I've lived like the last 20 years or so in Ohio, where bad weather is really bad. I mean, the storms come down out of Canada and they just beat you down, you know? And the heat in the summer is really nasty, really high humidity. And, you know, up there in the high 80s, high 90s, not quite 100, but it's not quite as bad in the summer as the South is. But generally speaking, when the rains come through or when any kind of storm comes through, people in Ohio grit their teeth and get an ugly look on their face and just slush through it, you know, like, oh, more of life. And you see that so much in the faces of people in Ohio. But down here, as the storms roll through, you know, you just see people walking around like, you know, hey, it's summer and it's raining and it's Alabama, and you don't even notice. It's like, you know, it's just a part of the day to them. It's almost like you see people in Hawaii like that when the rains come through in the afternoon in Hawaii, and they just, you know, go right about their business. No umbrella, no special clothing. They just keep doing what they're doing. It's really weird.
No, it's just reality. Yeah, it's just reality for them, really.
I suppose it's kind of strange getting hung up on something you can't control, you know.
Yeah, like weather.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kind of a thing, because, you know, especially me, you know, like I deliver mail all day, and, you know, especially in Scotland when sometimes it's absolutely pounding of rain, you know, and you actually just get to the point where maybe about halfway through the shift, and you're complete, even though you're wearing like waterproof trousers and a big, what they call a stormproof jacket, you're soaked right through to your underwear. But like, you start to think, well, I can't really get any wetter now, so it's not like it matters anymore, you know, can't get any wetter than this possibly.
You know, we were talking before the show started about people's perception of government, like government surveillance and false flag things and stuff. And I kind of think that relates to what you just said. There comes a saturation point of where, you know, you talk to people and they say, like what Katie was saying before we started the show, you know, you talk to people about some event that is very clearly or proven to be a false flag. And people look at you and they say, yeah, probably, that's probably true. And then they just, it doesn't sink in. And I think there's that, I think that's part of the phenomenon. I think there's a saturation point where people, they know that their governments are just completely out of control, but they feel like, well, there's nothing I can do about it. And it's already soaked me to the bone. And so I'm just going to keep delivering mail, or I'm just going to keep doing this thing that I have to do to sludge through life. And you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what you were thinking of, wasn't it? Like how, because we were talking about, like, before we started, things like, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which has got the U.S. into the Vietnam War.
It's been proven as a false flag. It was.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Nobody cares. That's the whole thing about it, is it's nobody. You can offer people facts, and people do shrug and go, yep, probably right.
Yeah.
But it's easier to probably just ignore.
It's even when, like, in my work, when I hear people saying, like, we had an election recently and people were like, oh, those politicians are the same and they're all liars and all that. And then they go, but I voted for so-and-so. And you're like, well,
why did you bother voting if you think they're all liars? What's the point?
Yeah, if you think they're all liars, why are you actually putting faith in any of them then?
I mean, I don't say it to be negative either. People often say, oh, that's such a negative outlook. I don't see it as a negative outlook.
Realistic. I am
trying to remove myself as far away from any kind of state involvement as humanly possible.
It's kind of like if you were on the Titanic.
And I don't see the weird thing with that.
It's kind of like if you were on the Titanic and you knew it was sinking and you still wanted to grab a bucket and bail it, you know, try to get the water out. It's like, no, you know it's going to sink. Why are you voting? Why are you going out there and putting signs? Do they, here in America, there's an obsession with putting political signs in your yard. Do they do that in Scotland?
Oh, in your window.
I see some people in gardens, but it's very rare. It's usually just in people's windows, something they've maybe printed out.
We have
an
abundance of apartment flat buildings in our area, so that's probably why we see it more in the windows.
Yeah.
But yeah, you put up your chosen party poster in your window to let everybody know what you're voting or something.
But like during the Scottish independence referendum, I noticed there was a lot more than there is, say, for example, we recently had a general election, yeah, and there was much less, you know, people got kind of more into it and more sort of
in the referendum. It was very much yes or no, and you would see that a lot in people's windows.
And that actually brings up an interesting question, because Katie and I don't vote in like general elections, but we are having a sort of disconnect just now.
Yep.
In the way that there's a proposed, right, I believe it when I see it, but there's a proposed referendum about Britain's EU membership in 2017, you know. They've been promising this for ages in this country, you know, so it's in or out of the European Union, basically. Yep. And Katie said she's just not going to bother voting, but I think it's the kind of thing in referendums, I feel differently. I don't know if
I've only ever been through one, though. I've only ever had the independence one, which I did vote in.
There was one about the voting system, but hardly anyone cared.
No, I just, I don't, I'm sorry, I take the view of, I want no part of it.
That's fair
enough.
I
want them to see I didn't show it. I don't want any part of it at all.
Yeah. I just think referendums are different than parliament elections. Well, that's just me.
I don't know. It really depends. I don't think I'm well educated enough on it, to be quite honest with you. If I found out what it would mean for us and our family, if we
concretely
left
instead of abstract.
Yeah, but yeah. I can't be bothered right now, so I just have to deal with that.
Here in the US,
do you have a lot of referendums?
It's a little different. They generally don't call them that, but there are small local elections where they decide whether or not to, you know, raise the school tax or raise the road tax or, you know, raise some local sales tax or whatever. We have those sometimes twice a year in some areas. And
we don't have that at all. No.
Sometimes there's ferocious infighting over that, you know, locally. And, you know, I used to get involved in the local elections, attempting to get the local government to stop taxing so much. This was back in Ohio. And even with that, it was in a small district where, you know, if you could convince 40 people to come out and vote in one direction or another, you'd own the election, because they were so tight. The elections were so tight and the voting group was so small. But even at that, I learned that, like, the most obvious was the school district. The school district, every 6 months, would hit us with a request for a new tax, or for an increase in the tax, or for a new levy, or for a new, some kind of increase in tax, however they want to label it. And I learned that no matter whether you defeat the school tax or whether you know, even a resounding defeat, they'll be back in 6 months and ask again. And even if they get the tax they want, they will be back in 6 months and ask again. They will do it every 6 months over and over and over, and they will never end. It's kind of like fighting ants with a hammer. They just, you know, and I came to the conclusion that the local people are not ever going to stop them, because there are people in the school district that are paid to do this every 6 months. And so the only way that I can deal with this is to stop and step myself out completely, and let, even if the taxes go to 170%, let it happen. And because that may be what it takes for people to realize, you know, what's happening to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean. I think they did that with Ireland. Again, if I'm going back to the European Union, they had it was like they called it the Lisbon Treaty at the time. And it was like there was a no on it. And then they just called another referendum. And it was like, we're just going to keep doing this until we get the answer that we're looking for, basically.
There's music.
Evil is relentless. But the market is the answer. We're going to slip away. We'll be right back after this break.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Ben Stone with Katie and Dan Green from the Greening Out podcast.
Yes.
Back on the Freedom Fiends. Right before the break, I was mentioning the futility of killing ants with a hammer, and how that's kind of what it feels like to me if you're trying to get involved specifically in local, you know, national government. It's absolutely, I will argue with anybody, it's a waste of time to get involved with it. And even worse, you know, there's the moral aspects of, do you really think you can use a federal government of any kind, or a national government of any kind, to accomplish what you want to accomplish? Is that really a moral thing? So that's one argument. But the other argument is there any practical reason to just pour yourself and your resources, your money, your time, your effort, literally your sweat and your tears, into some kind of a national election process that's just going to, if you're successful, it's just going to bring in another one of those dirty, rotten, scoundrel politicians that isn't worth wiping off your feet to keep off your carpet? But on the local basis, you have this real tempting thing that's like, oh, if we can just get 50, 75, 100 people to agree with us, if we can just go door to door and get people involved in this, we can stop the local government from doing this stupid thing or whatever. And yet, you know, they just keep coming back over and over and over and over, hitting you with the same thing over and over. And that's why I compared it to ants, because it's like, you know, the ants, if ants find food, they send out scouts constantly. Constantly, an anthill will send out scouts. And if they find the slightest crumb in your kitchen, in your house or something, and they can get away with getting in there and finding it, then they'll put a trail to get there, and the other ants will start coming in. And you can stand there and kill individual ants all day and all night, and you cannot win because they can reproduce faster than you can kill them. And that's kind of the way with local government. It's like these little parasites, these little creatures of local government are just there. And I was thinking about that, and I thought, you know, that's exactly, in the U.S., that's how they passed the Constitution. That's how they got it through. When the Constitutional Convention first created the coup that kicked out the Articles of Confederation, and there was a small group of Washington and Hamilton supporters that were mostly members of a secret society called the Society of the Cincinnatus. And you can look that all up. It's not so secret now, but at the time, it was a society of dedicated followers of George Washington. And that's not crazy conspiracy theory. That's very well documented. It's all right there. And so these guys got together, took over the convention that was supposed to be to modify the Articles of Confederation. They took that over. They held the convention earlier than it was supposed to, before the other delegates arrived. And then they literally had soldiers and locked the doors and wouldn't let other people in and wouldn't let the people in out. And then they brought in this new constitution, and they attempted to get people to sign it. And they had a real hard time. It took months. And they still couldn't get the thing ratified. And so their solution to this was to just keep coming back with this constitution, pounding it, each of the individual states, pounding it on them over and over and over and over until they got it ratified one state after the next. So the process that these evil, I name just almost popped out of my mouth, but we're on radio. So these fatherless, dirty, rotten scoundrels who do this, these politicians, can I think of a word worse than politician? These people use the same tactics that they've used for hundreds of years to get the consent of people. And, you know, for me, I'm just not going to give them my consent anymore. I'm not going to register to vote. I'm not going to go vote. You want to raise the local income tax or the local sales tax or the local banana tax or whatever, you raise it right up to 190%, and I'll just watch you, and I'll laugh, and I'll buy my bananas under the table somewhere. So that hopefully I won't rant for the next 2 hours, yeah. But anyway, that's my thoughts.
You sound like an evil genius there. Like, you just do that and I will watch you.
I agree. No, I agree with the whole sentiment. I think you should, I'm saying you should secede any way you can. I'm saying that. I don't know if that means anything to anyone. But for me, it just means like, try not to, you know, if you can, don't involve them in your life. Don't.
Yeah, we know people are dependent on the government, and we want to be as far away from that as possible. But it's interesting as well, you mentioned constitutions, because I mentioned the Scottish independence referendum there before the break, and that was the whole big thing. It's like, oh, we'll write this Scottish constitution, and all of a sudden it'll be magic, and we'll all be rich.
That's worked well in the past.
Magic papers. They put an incantation on a paper and government works.
Exactly, yep. That's how it works.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Squisscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons. And you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
So this has been Stone with Dan and Katie Green of the Greening Out podcast. So I didn't mean to talk through the whole last segment. I was going to let Dan tell us all about the wonderful organization called the EU, the European Union. Dan, don't you just love big international governments like that? Aren't they great?
Oh, I do. No, I really don't. I mean, the EU for me is just one of those classic examples of like why, you know, monarchy is basically, in my opinion, nonsense.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those ones where it started out as like a small trading block between, I think it was what, like 12 countries or something like that. And now it's become like a big government with an appointed president. And, you know, we've got all these, like, there's all this scaremongering in this country about the EU as well, because there's like, people are split on whether to leave, whether to stay in, you know, and there's all this. I mean, we watched a thing about this Conservative Party UKIP. We've mentioned it before, and it was like a, what they call a docudrama, but it's just a drama based on what
these
lefties think would happen if a Conservative Party got in. But in this docudrama, so-called, they left the EU and almost immediately, like, all hell broke loose in Britain.
We did a show about it that maybe we could send a link.
It was
a terrible piece of propaganda that was never going to ever happen.
No, I mean, people, all hell won't break loose because you leave.
In the election, the party that they're referring to in that propaganda piece actually did very, very badly. They lost seats.
They lost a seat. Yeah, yeah, that's the UK Independence Party.
UKIP. Yeah. Yes, UKIP. They did not do well.
They did not. And that's the problem with the EU. I mean, some people have theorized that it works similar to the Soviet Union, you know, but that's just conjecture. That's what other people have said. That's not, I don't know how the Soviet Union worked inside, but I do know that the fact that EU is, the problem is you've just got this mix of economies that don't work. I mean, the euro was a terrible idea because, I mean, like, it shows just an economic ignorance, because if you're trying to take like the manufacturing economy of Germany and, you know, the tourism based economy of Greece, you know, look what's happened. You know, they're not the same at all. They work completely differently. So even trying that stupid euro currency was just a mistake.
And I was very happy we never entered into it.
Yeah, I mean, my grandfather knew, I may have said this before, but whatever, my grandfather knew nothing about economics. He wasn't a politics guy, he wasn't an economics guy, but he was around at the time, I think it was around about the 60s in this country, when they changed the money, like they changed the system, and he said that was a massive con to put all the prices up, and at the time when this euro stuff started.
Yeah.
Right about the time this...
I can imagine that. Look, it looks like...
I was going to say...
Go ahead.
We've been joined. No, I was going to say, right about the time this euro stuff started, my grandfather said it would be the biggest con since decimalisation in this country. So
this,
even though having no economic...
Furries. This is Furries, F-U-R-R-I-E-S. The Fiend Phone, unnecessary, random, re-education, interruption, exigency system. I'm just doing this because I can, man. I can interrupt live radio whenever I feel like it. This is Michael Dean. This is my show. I built this.
It's good to have your voice back. You know, it's not perfect. It's not 100%, but it's good to hear your voice, Michael.
It's getting there. All right. So here's my thought about Cantwell.
Okay.
Okay. So
okay.
So hey Katie, what's up? So the guy basically thinks he's afraid of anybody like stealing his fame. You know, he doesn't allow links on his site. He denigrates anybody who's doing anything cool. Just this whole litany of stuff that just, and people that know him have told me that. Like people that, you know, I know Chris Cantwell. I worked with Chris Cantwell, and you, sir, are no Chris Cantwell. That kind of person. No names named, but, you know, people that may or may not have recently fired him. People, you know, you know, from his job at the 10-cent store where he sells his thoughts. Okay, so he believes that fame, or even attention in his case, is a finite resource. So he guards it jealously and he tries anyone else from having it. Where, and that is a socialist attitude, because fame and attention is actually an unlimited resource, and you bring more to yourself by being free with, you know, pimping others who are good. Like, if you get the reputation as the guy who tries to help people, you know, like me, do the podcast and stuff, like you get fans from it, you don't lose fans from it. So
that's, he's the wrong. He's a socialist. DIY. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, DIY. It's DIY. Yeah. Not DIY. DIY is declare your independence. DIY is do it yourself, which to me means, you know, punk rock. You don't care if you're on a label. You don't care if you do your podcast, even thinking you never get on radio. You end up on radio. You start a band thinking you never get signed to a major label. You happen to get signed to a major label. And, you know, some would say being on a major label or being on radio is not DIY because you sell out, but I lose money doing this show and nobody else makes money. So, but DIY in the UK means a hardware store, right, Dan and Katie?
Yeah, that's like a DIY store is a hardware store where you buy things to make things at home.
Yeah, do it yourself.
Wooden tools.
I do it myself. Ooh. So anyway, Cantwell is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. And his attitude that fame is a limited resource is as silly as right wingers and left wingers who say, well, the problem with having privatized roads is that some people would have the free rider. Not everyone would pay. Saying there's a free rider problem is socialist too. So there you go. Mm. I have proved mathematically that Chris Cantwell is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
And a Keynesian.
Okay.
Yep. So let's go back. What were you guys talking about? Decimal places? The Dewey Decimal metric system?
I was just explaining how, like, even though my grandfather had absolutely zero knowledge of economics, he could tell purely from experience that the euro was a bad, bad idea. And he was right, because it didn't all crash in that till after he died. And he was saying that before it even came in.
I'll tell you something about economics. People can do it intuitively without any training if they stay away from the Keynesian idea. Here's an example. My father went to a one-room schoolhouse. He's 94 now, so he was born before the Great Depression. He went to a one-room schoolhouse, paid attention to the other classes because he was smart and got bored with his, you know, what grade he was in, graduated at 15, went out and got three jobs. He drove around the county testing milk for, you know, fat content, and was like certified to do that. And farmers had to do that before they could sell their milk. So he did that and he had other jobs and he was a farmer. And then, like, you know, he and my mother were farmers. And around the time I was born, they moved from Sherman, New York, you know, the country 10 miles away, to the bustling metropolis of Westfield, where I was born, which is a population of 3,500. And he went to night school. He got a job selling insurance. He got a license. Got a license to sell insurance while he was still on the farm. Came to the city, got a job, the town, got a job as selling insurance. Kept doing that. My mother worked jobs. She ended up owning a store, and they were like broke without, you know, two nickels to rub together when they first, you know, moved from the farm to the town. They ended up buying a house, which, you know, that house is now worth like $200,000. It's a giant house. I mean, it'd be worth a lot more anywhere else, but it's an economically depressed town now. But so he worked selling insurance. Then he worked for the same company selling real estate. Then he got his real estate and insurance license, started his own company, and then saved money. And then, like, bought like four different companies that over the years, like, all of them had like 30 employees. Like, he was signing paychecks for 30 employees doing, you know, like, assembly line stuff. Then he sold those. He owned six houses. He's still alive. He's not very well off now, basically, because he left my mother and married this other woman, and she screwed him for everything he had and then divorced him and then died 2 years later. So she sucked everything out of him and gave it to her grandkids and great-grandkids and then died. And tormented him the whole time they were married. That's the bad decision he made. But business-wise, I mean, he literally came up from nothing, ended up, you know, owning $1 million worth of businesses, creating jobs for 30 people at a time without ever having gone to college, you know? and he graduated school when he's 15 and just could do basic math. So, you know, you don't need a degree in economics to understand economics. And I would say the degree in economics generally probably makes it worse for most people because it's Keynesian. All right, I got to take this.
Exactly.
Hey, it is Michael.
Okay, then we'll continue, shall
we? Are we continuing?
Yeah.
Should we, Michael?
That is true, though. I think, I mean, obviously, I'm still like in my 20s, so I don't have an awful lot of it, so I can't speak to like a long life experience. But I've seen two different types of people, the person that sort of learned from their life experience, and you can tell it shows, and the person who clearly hasn't, because the person who hasn't just keeps making the same mistakes over and over again. Would you agree, Ben?
Very true. Very true. I've seen that over and over. You know, I say this a lot, but I used to work in the aerospace industry, and I did so. I worked with really high-level engineers that were way smarter than I could ever hope to, you know, to be. Really good educations, and the only degree I had, the only formal education I had was in theology. I had an associate's in theology.
Really?
And it was from an uncredited school, and it, yeah, and so it meant nothing in engineering circles. But some of those engineers were in their field were absolutely stunningly brilliant. And then, you know, they almost couldn't figure out how to put gas in their car. They were, you know, their life experiences were so limited that they...
That's a cliche. There's actually a lot of musicians and artists are like that, too. Like they, you know, Frank Zappa said it, too. He said, like, you know, most people that spend 14 hours a day from the age of 10 practicing guitar often never learn to brush their teeth. And there was a cliche that Einstein was like that, too. And I think people may have exaggerated that, but... Yeah, it is. When somebody, whereas I've kind of always had the well-rounded jack of all trades, master of a little bit of them, to where, you know, I can brush my teeth and balance my checkbook, and I know to put on a coat when it's raining.
We particularly have a friend who's very much like that, who's very sort of can do things for himself, like pretty
That's
much
his
most
sort of
things.
Philosophy is DIY everything, just like everything.
That is his whole life is just basically do it yourself. It's don't rely on anyone else, and it's impressive.
And that's a pretty cool thing to do.
I was reading an interview last night with Joey Ramone's brother. You know Joey Ramone from the Ramones.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
No, I'm not familiar.
Well, I think everybody. Maybe there's people listening who don't. It was a punk rock band. It was very important.
Excuse our sarcasm.
It was the first really big punk rock band, and. Joey had OCD so bad when he was a kid, doctors told his mother he'd never be able to function without constant care. But she was really supportive of him, and you know, he was able to do it. Drove
like
the band
Forrest
crazy
Gump.
Though. The band thought he was messing with him at first.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. My fellow sheep. Election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
He does now. Oh, you're a fiend. He hates you.
Yay.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from Windowless Bunker. This is Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from the Freedom Fiends. Yes, I've been sick, but I'm back. I don't care. I will talk. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the C word. Not the dirty word, but there's a person. We're calling him the C word. He cannot be named. But if you don't even know who the C word is, you will be able to relate to this because you probably know someone like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Principles apply. You probably know someone like this on the internet. And if you've never even been on the internet, you know someone like this. So it's going to be universal. So
if you've never been on the internet, you're listening to this on the internet, maybe, you're not.
On the radio.
Maybe
or the radio. You're listening on the radio. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's possible. There could be people who hear us regularly who've never used the internet.
Never. I would like to speak to these people. Like,
yeah. Give out your number in Scotland and they can call you.
I have a P.O. box in Scotland. Oh, here,
you should, man. I can't believe everyone should have a P.O. I've had a P.O. box since I was 15. Because I like to order stuff without my family knowing. But I don't ever want to get my home address out. Yeah, you guys gave me your home address and you were creepy. You were creeped out by it.
Well,
that's what you think is our home address.
I mulled it over. No, it's fine.
Why didn't you give me your P.O. box?
No, it's fine.
We don't have a P.O. box.
I'm just kidding. I don't know. I have addresses, like work addresses I can get stuff sent to, which I do for like eBay and stuff. But with people I know and trust, I'll give out my home address. Just if you turn up here, we have nowhere for you to stay.
We were out driving in rural Wyoming one day and we stopped to use a bathroom in this bar in the afternoon. And we went in, nobody in the bar except the bartender lady and two grizzled cowboys. I mean, they looked like the Marlboro Man, but like grizzled, more grizzled. They were what you think of when you think of cowboys, and they were real cowboys. These were guys that like work on a ranch probably. They had dirt on their cowboy boots. They were really, they were working cowboys. This is a like everybody knows the image of a cowboy, but in most of the world, people haven't actually seen a cowboy. Wyoming is the cowboy state. There is a cowboy on our license plate. It is called the cowboy state. There are cowboys here. So I go in, there's these two grizzled guys who look like they probably have never touched a computer or know what one is. And they're sitting at the bar talking about a beef on Facebook. It was funny, man. I liked
it. That is a funny image, actually. Yep. When I think cowboy, I think John Wayne.
Why did he just instant message the other guy and say draw?
Just I am draw. No, we were talking about the C word and stuff.
Cowboys in Wyoming don't carry revolvers. They carry Glocks, man. Okay, go on.
No, I was just going to say, we're talking about the C word. I don't know, like, we were talking before, I don't know if this is, are they famous? Or like,
no, he thinks he is.
Do they think?
Yeah, he thinks he's famous. He thinks he's famous, and, you know.
I see fame as something like, I would think famous and think like world, like infamous kind of thing.
I think famous is my dad has heard of you. My 94-year-old dad has heard of you. Like, Mick Jagger, famous.
But that's biased, because that's your dad. So, well, like,
no. My dad's a really good acid test for it, because my dad can't use the internet as well as those Wyoming cowboys by far. He has far more problems. Sure. He can't get on Facebook, and it's a good thing, because if he could, it would scare him.
Probably.
Facebook scares
him. I don't
Facebook
think anyone account. Over the age of 90 should go on Facebook.
Over 90? He has a Facebook account. My niece made him one, but it says that he went to, like... Oh. Whatever school, where did Harry Potter go to school? That's where she
Hogwarts.
Said my dad went. She said my dad went to Hogwarts. Yeah. All right. Oh, so, dear. Yeah, the guy thinks he's famous. What were we saying about it during the break? It was pretty good.
How to make up statistics and how to get high friend levels on social media.
There's this thing that you can see, like, where people's traffic comes from. And it says that a third of the C word's web traffic for YouTube comes from the country of Turkey. There is no way that's organically true. I think that's where the company is that he's paying to see. You know, they probably got rooms full of people making 2 cents an hour that sit there and click on videos.
In Turkey, I mean, is it not Erdogan or Erdogan? I'm pronouncing his name probably wrong, but as far as I understand, they've been locking up bloggers and things like that in Turkey recently.
In Turkey, it's...
They wouldn't like us.
It's on the borders with... What is it? Is it border with Syria?
Syria.
That's where a lot of people have been, like, you know, all these stories here about people
going they censored through, the internet at
through,
some point.
Through Turkey to get to Syria, you know, to become, to join ISIS or whatever it is. So, yeah, there's been a lot of stories about that. But Turkey, yeah, they're quite a conservative...
a Muslim country, man.
Yeah, it's a Muslim country.
You know,
they wouldn't like people
see,
like me and you put it that way.
I have a challenge. I have a Cantwell challenge here. Okay, that guy...
He who shall not be named.
Yeah, the C word. So that guy, like, loves to pee everybody off. Like, he will burn the American flag, whatever. You know, I want him to do a video heavily denouncing ISIS and give his home address. If you think you are a gutsy guy, if Cantwell thinks he's a gutsy guy, I want to do a video denouncing ISIS that has his home address in it.
I want no part of whatever comes from this.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiendphone. I'm using Fiendphone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiendphone.
Fiendphone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiendphone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiendphone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's lower Battalion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite Mid-Pair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments. And you can learn more at BIPCOT.org. My name is Dan Green. I'm talking to the lovely Katie Green. Hey. I'm also talking to Michael W. Dean and Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. We're all on. And we're all bitching.
We're all having some chat. We're all having.
Did you say
some...
We're bitching.
Bitching, yeah. Or bitchin. Just pick bitchin. Which one you like best.
There's two different bitchin. Meanings. How many?
We're pitching.
We're pitching with a P or a B. Yeah.
You could
use
either, Michael.
I was using a B,
Michael.
But like no, for it's radio,
for radio
purposes, we
it's,
could say
it was a P as in pop. But we are pitching our ideas
yeah,
at you.
We are,
and
yep.
That's what he said. That is what
that's
he said.
What he did.
So
I
let's
saw
talk about
question.
It.
It's just
me an
my
idea.
Accent.
No, I just I'm very aware of the fact we're talking about someone who I've never met.
Well.
I don't
okay,
know
people
this,
don't know. Yeah, people don't know. Listen on the radio that have never been on the internet, and we know you're out there. You know what they used to do when I was a kid? Like we should have like. For a transcript of this show, please send $5 to P.O. Box 1142, Casper, Wyoming. Like, they used to give, before the internet, every radio show and a lot of TV shows gave out P.O. boxes and, like, sold things. Like, instead of go to our website and, you know, read our mission statement, it would be, send $5 to P.O. Box.
Yeah. I remember that. Like, I used to watch PBS. And it was like, if you want a PBS keyring, you just send us money and we'll send you it.
So,
but I never trusted it.
So Chris Cantwell is this guy in America that thinks he's a libertarian or an anarcho-capitalist, but really is kind of more of a performance artist clown and does things like, a couple July 4th ago, he did a video where he burned and then shot an American flag to make a point.
Yeah,
I don't know what the point was. I mean, to me, like what really stood out to that video was that he muzzle swept his leg a couple times with a loaded firearm. Which is insane. If you're a gun person, you know that is insane. That guy, I'm working on this list of top 50 ways Chris Cantwell will likely die in the next year. And one near the top is going to be accidentally shoots himself. Okay, so, but another one I'd like to add is, there's not much he and I can agree on, but I think he would probably agree that ISIS are bad people if they actually exist and aren't really like just CIA people or something. But if they, you know, then they're still evil. Uh-huh. So they're evil. They do behead people. They're taking over countries in the Middle East. They're, you know, destroying 4,000-year-old, antique buildings and statues and things. And killing people, yeah. And, man, killing people, which is worse. So, and they're acting like a government. They're trying to be in a... It is the Islamic State, IS, Islamic State in the Levant or whatever. So they're bad people. I think Chris Cantwell, he goes after safe targets. You know, he goes after patriots in a country where freedom of speech sort of exists. He goes after mailmen. You know, what are they going to do? Spray them? spray thieves. Him with their mace. Dan's a mailman. Paperclip thieves. Child molesters, that's an easy target. Everyone can disagree on that. Agree that they're bad. So he goes after these really easy, soft targets. I want Chris Cantwell to prove what a bad butt he is by doing an extended video giving all the reasons ISIS are horrible, horrible people, and just denounce everything about them that should be denounced in detail, and begin and end the video, Chris, with your home address. If you really stand by what you say and you believe that, you know, your firearms protect you no matter what, like magic talismans, which us who have been carrying guns longer than him know is not true. Right, Ben?
Yeah, actually, let's Ben's throw in one shot. Other thing.
Let's Ben's been shot and lived. Okay, go on.
Let's throw in one other thing. Let's have him live on his, well, not live, but on his YouTube, draw a picture of the Prophet Muhammad and burn it on, Muhammad, video, on video.
There you go.
Dare ya.
There you go.
You'll do that with an American flag. Let's see you do it with your own hand-drawn picture of the Prophet Muhammad.
Yep. So that's a hell of a challenge. Goading people into doing things.
He could warm up to it too by burning pictures of the Freedom Fiends because he hates us.
He doesn't know Dan and I. We're on a different continent.
I'm trying to get me and Ben to replace him on Wednesdays on Free Talk Live. I'm going to pitch that idea. I think it should be Ben. I'll send him
an 8x10 glossy of me that he can burn on camera.
There you go. If he gives out his address.
Well.
Right, exactly. So,
you know what? I think the best thing, you know what? I don't know the dude.
He knows you. He's got a dartboard of you because you're a fiend.
Sure. I don't know the man. I've never met him. I've never spoken to him. I've actually never, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what he's for. You know, I just want, I like to talk to people.
He's like Steph Molyneux. Yeah. He's a fan of Molyneux. Yeah. They both present themselves as bastions of liberty, but really they're only out for themselves. They're out to be worshipped. That's what they both want. Yeah. They want some money too, but money's just kind of to keep the lights on. They don't care that much about that, which is kind of noble in a way. I like it. I don't care that much about money. But you know too, like Cantwell is an anarcho-capitalist, as am I, and he's really bad at capitalism. I realized this the other day because last week I spent more money on home improvement and yard work, hiring a guy to do both. You know, I had a guy, like a handyman, come like 4 days in a row, and I like rented some heavy machinery. I spent more money last week on home improvement than Cantwell has made via Bitcoin in his whole career of cyber begging. And like, he's constantly like, I need money. People need to support me so I can still say the N-word to black guys on Twitter. Because I can't get hired. I spent more money in one project that was, you know, not necessary than that guy has made in his whole career of begging. Like, it didn't really faze me, you know? I mean, it kind of was like we had to discuss it, my wife and I, but we just spent it. We just spent it, man. And it's, you know, because we're good capitalists because we have jobs.
Well, I think the thing about it is he's obviously, this is a job for him for some reason. And, you know, maybe, but, you know, I remember reading somewhere from a very smart lady that he has presented himself to the market and the market has said no. I do not want you.
Who said that? MK Lords?
And I want to give a shout out to my girl. I really like Megan, MK Lords. Yeah, I want to give her a shout out. She's a lady fiend. She's my she-bro.
Yep.
And she's my she-bro. She's my she-bro.
She-bro? What's a she-bro?
She-bro.
She-bro.
Oh, they said she-bro. Like, I was like, you can't
no.
see that on the radio.
B-R-O, she's my she-bro.
Okay, she's your sheep row.
And if we were she-bro. Jewish, she'd be my Hebrew. She'd be my she-bro.
Your she-bro?
Yeah, if you're Jewish, no, she's like, Jewish. This is my Hebrew.
Diana's Jewish. Or other,
I'm not Jewish. Right. I'm just throwing around terms.
I'm not Jewish.
I'm just beginning a conversation.
I'm not Jewish, but I...
You're not Judas?
I have made sweet, sweet love with some really hot Russian, Polish, Jewish women in my life.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Michael.
Yep. Did you guys listen to my old podcast yet?
No.
We haven't,
because you keep telling me not to. So.
That's me telling everyone to. I'm just being coy.
I think it's against the law in the UK.
I think it is, actually.
Is it?
It is. The spanner law. Yeah, it's illegal. Well, it's illegal in the UK to do anything in bed consensually with your partner that leaves a mark. And what we were doing was leaving marks that took days to go away.
No way.
You don't think that's illegal?
That's not illegal here. I no.
I've not looked into it.
I've
never heard that, but
I've
not looked
into it.
Sexual laws
are here in this country. I've never felt
Operation
the need to look
Spanner.
Them up.
Operation Spanner.
No way.
Was the name of an operation carried out by police in the UK in the city of Manchester in 1987 as the result of a group of homosexual men were convicted of assault occasioning actual body harm for their involvement in consensual BDSM over a 10-year period.
Wow.
The resulting House of Lords case ruled that consent was not a valid legal defense for wounding and actual body harm in the UK, except for surgery. It is illegal in the UK.
Kate is genuinely shocked. She actually says
it's UK saying they own your body. Why
well,
is that shocking?
They own everything else. That's weird that they would say that consent is not enough. Mind you, our Prime Minister, David Cameron, recently came out and said that...
Our Prime Minister?
Technically, Dan.
What, you got a mouse
country.
In your pocket?
Har har. David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, as it were,
came
out and said that it is no longer just enough for our citizens to obey the law. It is, we've been, what was it, Dan? I'm paraphrasing.
It's something about how we've been complacent for too long and now it's no longer...
As a people, we are complacent and it's no longer enough to say to our citizens, you obey the law and we leave you alone.
Yeah,
he
basically.
Actually
what's
said
his,
this
what's
recently.
His, what does he want?
He's just a...
No, what is it? What's he saying? What does he want then? He wants you to obey the law and spy on your neighbours or what?
Well, no, it's no, not. They want to beef up the... Basically, it was to do with the anti-terrorism laws, as far as I understand it.
I just realized I said a mean word on radio.
Yeah, there was a surveillance communications bill that had been vetoed before when there was a coalition government, but now that Cameron has it all his own way, now he wants to push this communications bill through, but we'll give him more spying powers.
He wants as much power as your... That no, he wants it to be. 19, does.
He wants more than that. He wants it to be 1984, man. Which is a book really that was written in and about the UK.
Yeah,
in
and 19, actually, but a lot of people 20, don't realize that George.
No, 1948.
He's a socialist. But George, he was a socialist. He was a democratic socialist. He was just horrified by the Soviet Union, and that's what Animal Farm is really about. Animal Farm is really obviously an allegory.
Oh yeah,
the
I mean
Soviet
Animal
Union.
Farm, like every character, pig and man and sheep, is a certain person in Russia, but
oh yeah, it screams out at you. But I got read that as a child and I just got taught that communism doesn't work, but it's way more nuanced than that. It's not just like a kid's book.
You know what I hate when Google like decides what I'm gonna look at. Did
they
do that
tell
there?
You
yeah, like yesterday Google had Sally Ride on. They probably didn't have that there. She's the first American woman in space.
No.
And I'm like, what's heroic about that, man? The Russians were fobbing ladies into space in the 60s, man. Yeah. This lady went up in the 80s. And it wasn't that they were like more progressive, Russia. It was like women were more expendable. They sent a mouse, then they sent a cat, then they sent a dog, then they sent a lady. And then they sent men.
So we're above dog. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
where I sit on the,
was there
on the
chimp?
Chain
was
of
there a chimp
important,
somewhere
yeah.
in that.
Yeah, well, there's a chimp in there.
Yeah. Yeah. A chimp somewhere.
But a lot of those animals, they didn't return. They didn't try to return. They just sent
them
into
space. Did the
women
return?
Yes.
Did they let the lady come back?
Yes, the lady was allowed to return.
Good. I won't have to start some kind of social justice blog about this now.
Bring home our ladies
Bring
from
home
space.
Bring home our ladies in space.
Earth needs women.
Oh, Earth needs women. You know, we have a female first minister here in Scotland.
Again with the we.
Leave
always
me alone.
With the we.
It's just vocabulary.
No, it's one thing I really like that Ian Freeman does well is just whenever somebody says, we need to stop sending people to the Middle East. Ian's like, when a caller says that, Ian's like, who's we? I don't do that. And then I take it further. I just say to everybody, what? You got a mouse in your pocket?
I know. I say it far too much.
Worms.
I'm going to work on that in the next segment. Williams.
Yep.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Words.
Out of control, freedom fiends.
Bam.
Spiraling into disorder.
This yes. is the Freedom Fiends on the BBC One. Bringing you all
That's not
all
true.
The, bringing you all the latest news about Operation Spanner, what every good British citizen needs to know about yeah. Operation Spanner. And I'm going to turn it over to one of our co-hosts, Katie Green, to tell us about Operation Spanner, what every good Brit and UK and Scottish and Welsh citizen needs to know to protect yourself and turn in your neighbors. And this is not really BBC, but go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Michael Dean. Yes, this is not the BBC in any way, shape, or form.
Oh,
this is the Freedom Fiends.
Too.
No, Dan, I'm not doing whatever you wanted me to say. So, okay. So, no, we were talking about this thing and what Operation Spanner. Now, this is apparently a law here that you're not allowed to leave any kind of mark
on your loved one.
On your lover, after whatever it is you do as consenting adults.
Rumpy pumpy.
Even with consent. Even with consent. Now, that to me, I don't really know what that means. Now,
that means they own your body.
That's weird, though.
I'm surprised the National Health doesn't send people door-to-door to inspect your bottoms.
The NHS sends out letters. The NHS sends out letters to every woman between the age of 20 and 60 to come in for screenings. They send out letters. The NHS sends so many letters. That's the National Health Service we have here.
That's what they do. They send letters. Yeah. That's their business.
They send
plan.
Letters. They make posters all about safe sex, sexual health, blah, blah, blah. You get free condoms here on the National Health Service.
Are they good condoms?
You get they're really good.
Oh,
yeah.
Are they?
No, they're fine. Okay. They're fine. They're just standard.
They're
the ones
like
you buy.
Eight ply or something.
No, they're not like government issued condoms like brick.
Well, they are, but technically.
They are branded. They are fine. But no, I'm saying like you get that here. You get like, you get your birth control. But yeah, but no, they do want to know what you're doing with your body at all times. It's kind of creepy. I don't like that. I'm pretty private about myself. I don't really like discussing things with my doctor.
It's again the whole prostitution thing because like, I mean, we've been in places like Amsterdam and
where
stuff.
Totally
and I've said this before and it's totally true. I feel way safer walking through the red light district of Amsterdam at like midnight than I do walking through the city centre of Glasgow at midnight.
Oh yeah,
absolutely,
without a doubt.
No, there's no question in my mind.
Yeah, the same, I mean, the same is true like in America, like in Vegas in a casino, you know, it's such a controlled environment, or like Walt Disneyland, like Walt Disney too, World and Land, you've been to them, like they have they have a police force that's invisible, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Private police force.
The thing is, though, somebody got really mad at me. We were at Disney, and I went up to this guy, like the Disney police person. And I was like, can I buy... This is when I was a smoker. And I said, can I buy cigarettes? And he said, you'll not find any on this, on the Disney... You know,
complex
place, on the complex.
Aye, because
basically.
In Florida, it's, we're talking about in Florida.
Yeah, so I was really upset, and I went a whole day without smoking that day. I was
whereas,
really
whereas you could probably go like it's Florida. You could probably go 30 feet out the front gate and buy crack.
Yeah, probably. But you know, I didn't think
and
about that
gun.
At the
and
time.
Well, actually,
after I'd bought the crack and the gun, everything was just downhill from there. I mean, it's Disney. It's Florida. You have to do Florida properly when you go to Florida, don't
Walter
you?
Walter Block uses that. He uses Disneyland as like an example for the
private,
pros of privatization because, like, we've got a park here that's beautiful. It's got historic buildings.
But I would
and things.
Not go in it after dark.
After dark, if you go in it, you're asking to be murdered, basically. You know, you're because it's full of weirdos.
This
whereas,
is a park where people go to kill themselves. That's what they do in that park because it's so big.
There has been cases of that. Yeah,
sorry,
there
you know, actually, I have to make it clear that's how big. Been,
yeah. I'll dispel a myth too
is.
About gun ownership. If you're smart with gun owner, Ben and I carry guns 24/7. But Ben and I would not go into a bad neighborhood at night.
Correct.
Mm. I mean, you know, if we were driving through it and broke down, we'd get out and fix the tire. But there's no way in hell that I'm going to think, oh, I'm armed, I can go to a bad neighborhood. There's no reason for me to do it. I mean, if I had to, I don't know, like if my wife broke down, I'd go there. But
go
you know,
get
it's like,
her.
Yeah, if there's a reason to, but it's not like I go, oh, I
you
can go
seek
into
it
the
out.
I can go into the murder suicide park after dark in England, you know, because no, you don't do that.
You know, I have something to add to that. Of all the gun people that I've known, and I've known some really good gun people, and, you know, Kenneth Royce probably is on the top of the list. Bill Buford is probably
Boston Tea Party.
Yeah, exactly. And as they go down the ranks, probably the number three gun guy that I've ever known was asked a question. The person asked him, if you knew that you were getting ready to go into a gun battle, what kind of gun would you carry? And he said, I would not go. And he says, and the other guy's like, no, please, you know, you're avoiding. No, I would not go. I would not go into a situation where I knew there was going to be a gun battle.
Yeah. And if it came to me, I think I'd want a carbine rifle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something I could maneuver quickly, but they would have a lot more stopping power in a handgun.
I would run away.
Run away.
I don't know. I can't handle a gun, so.
What would he do when Operation Spanner comes to your house?
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Lost one of our fiends.
Where did he go?
Where do we put Michael? He was here a minute ago.
Oh, he was here a second ago. Check my pockets. Don't know.
I don't know what happened. No, Michael.
Well,
had
I think
drop
Michael's.
Off.
Yeah.
He has business to take care of, so we're back to me, Ben Stone, with Katie and Dan Green from the Greening Out podcast, and we're here on the Freedom Fiends on the radio, and then later on the internet. At freedomfiends.com, freedomfiends.com. And we're talking on Fiend Phone, and you can it's a free software that works way better than a bunch of the other competitors, and you can find out about it at fiendphone.com. So, Dan and Katie, last time we were on the radio together, I told some tales of old Mojave where I talked about shootouts.
You did, I remember.
Running from the law and all that kind of stuff. I have a little bit different. Oh, we have rain in the background again. I hope it's not too disruptive, but
it's actually quite a nice comforting sound.
Atmospheric.
It's quite
That's only because we're from Scotland we find it comforting.
Yeah, we find it kind of nostalgic and romantic to have the rain hitting the roof.
So if I had background noise like do 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 do, but
I have that going in my head all the time.
I kind of have
like circus music kind of going on.
Clowns running around.
I've got the Benny Hill music.
Dan, you've got some weird thing that's like
the Benny Hill music. That's kind of what I hear all the time.
No more music. Let Mr. Stone tell his story. It's too silly.
All right. That's
Someone
enough.
Has to be Graham Chapman in this.
So, Ben, please continue.
So way back in the early 1990s, my wife and I with our children lived in Reno, Nevada, and actually I think right on the border of Reno and Sparks, Nevada, the two towns sort of intersect. And we were, in those days, we started out in public schools with our kids, and I just got disgusted with the with the Nevada school system that was there in Reno area. So I yanked them out, and I started to do homeschooling, but the Nevada rules about homeschooling were so oppressive, I'm not sure what they're like now, that I stopped doing homeschooling and I started doing it didn't even have a name at the time, but I started doing unschooling with the kids. And again, it didn't have a name. It's just something that just seemed right. So I just started every day teaching them stuff and seeing what they were interested in, and whatever they were interested in, we would pursue and we would try to figure stuff out. And there was a lot of encouragement in reading and stuff like this. So one of the things that we did was we would travel around. We would go, you know, short day trips from the Reno area, which meant drive up to Virginia City, which is a fascinating place where the old Comstock mine is. And there's an old town there from the 1800s. And we would go to Carson City, the state capital of Nevada. And we actually went in one time to, the Nevada politicians were in session. So we went in and I introduced my kids to one of the state representatives and he gave us a tour of the Capitol building. And it was pretty neat. And so we did stuff like that. We went up to Lake Tahoe and poked around up there, went to historical societies and junk like that. And we were at the South Lake Tahoe Historical Society, and we were just looking at their stuff and everything, and there was this old man there who did not work there. He just kind of hung out. The Historical Society in South Lake Tahoe is like right on the edge of the city park, and the city park was actually our destination. But once we were at the park, then I saw the building that is it's like an old library, but it's where the Historical Society has their little museum and stuff. So we wandered on in, and there's this old guy there, and we were looking at stuff, and he was kind of a little curious why the kids were not in school. And so we were talking to him a little bit, and I explained to him some of our radical ideas that we had. And he says, we were looking at one of the displays there, and it was about Spooner Pass. And of course, the name Spooner Pass, why is it named Spooner Pass? Because, you know, people of our ilk, people who are crazy and don't want to be ruled over by governments and don't want to be enslaved by governments, a lot of us know about a guy from the 1800s named Lysander Spooner.
Ah.
So I thought,
Mr. Spooner,
I thought, is it possible that this Spooner Pass is named after Lysander Spooner? So I started talking to this old guy, and he's telling me about Spooner Pass, and he says, no, had nothing to do with anything like that. And so here's the story that this old guy told me. Now, I have tried to verify this story, and I cannot. So at this point, this is nothing but a tale of the old Mojave, except it's not really from the Mojave Desert. It's from the Eastern Sierras. But the story, as it was told to me by an old guy at the Historical Society in South Lake Tahoe, is that there was this guy named Spooner, and he had a large tract of land. And if you've ever seen the TV show Bonanza, and they show the map that catches on fire in the beginning of the show and everything, Spooner Pass is actually right in the middle of what would have been the pretend Ponderosa Ranch. The Ponderosa never actually existed. But if you're actually looking at a map of that time frame of the late 1800s, 1870s, 1880s, Spooner's ranch would have been right in the middle of that Ponderosa ranch, and it kind of bled over the mountains between Carson City and Lake Tahoe. And Spooner himself, and I couldn't the old guy didn't know Spooner's first name, and I've done some research, and I have not been able to discover Spooner's first name. But this guy named Spooner, he owned this property, and he made a living by cutting down trees on the property, logging, and then taking the logs and hauling them by horse, you know, the horses pulling the logs across the mountains, down through a pass, and up to where he could sell them at Carson City so that they would then be carried up to the Comstock mine up in Virginia City. And so that's how he made his living. He logged and drug the logs by horse and mule down through the pass and into Carson City where he sold the lumber. And eventually he was able to set up a little lumber yard, and he was able to, you know, he made enough money doing this that he was able to set up some stables and set up like a general store and so forth. And in the process of dragging all this lumber down to Carson City, by default, he created a road. And in doing this, there's also a pass there that links between his property over the mountains over to South Lake Tahoe. And so he was also, he started dragging the logs over that direction and essentially made a road there. So now this guy had created out of the wilderness a road linking Lake Tahoe to Carson City. And so people, of course, you know, if there's a road, people want to use it. So he started charging people a toll. And so now he had a toll road linking Carson City and South Lake Tahoe. In addition to that, he found out that he could, by having a toll road that linked these two communities, he could set up a livery stable, a couple of barns, he could set up a general store, and eventually a hotel and a saloon, and a little town started developing where he actually owned all the buildings of the town, but people would come there and work and live and so forth. And so he had a nice little community there based on this toll road that he had to take lumber back and forth between these cities. And this thrived for a while until a gentleman by the name of Johnson. Let me look at my notes here, make sure I've got that right. Yeah, Johnson. And again, I don't know his name, but here's a way to check this out if anybody's not sure about this. I've searched the internet. I can't find any of this stuff on the internet. However, if you have access to the state of Nevada's legal documents for the late 1800s, this guy Johnson sued Spooner under the grounds that he was not utilizing this toll road correctly for the best use of the community. And Johnson had deep connections in the government of Nevada, the state of Nevada at the time. And so Johnson kept appealing this, trying to sue Spooner, and eventually I believe it was the Supreme Court of the state of Nevada chose in the direction of Johnson and took Spooner's land that he had owned, that he had homesteaded legally, that he had owned for years and years and years, including his businesses and his road that he had developed, and put it all into the hands of Johnson, who had political connections, and left Spooner literally broke and alone and hungry and abandoned. That's what government will do for you. Yay! And so Johnson...
So he literally built a road. He literally built the road, and then the government just came in and went, nah,
yeah,
Spooner, you can't have this.
Spooner built the road through Spooner Pass. Spooner literally built a private road without government help, and then some scumbag using government stole his road. And then the road, you know, oftentimes if you get something that you didn't actually work for, you don't appreciate it. You know what I mean? If somebody just gives you something or you take it, steal it, oftentimes you just don't appreciate it because you haven't invested the work into it. So Johnson had this stolen property that the government had agreed to help him steal. And the road fell into disrepair. He didn't really work the businesses the way that he should have. The whole thing kind of fell apart. Shocking. People stopped using the road. He stopped repairing it. He stopped keeping it up. Eventually, it was not passable. And it got to the point of where, but Johnson still owned it. In the early 1900s, a guy named Carl Fisher, who is the founder of the Indianapolis 500 and a lot of other things, he was privately building a road from, Philadelphia. He built a road privately. He built a road with private funds, investments, from Philadelphia to San Francisco. And as he was going through that area of western Nevada and eastern California, he was surveying around, trying to find the best route to take his, it was called Lincoln Highway, and he came upon this abandoned Spooner Highway, the Spooner Toll Road through Spooner Pass. And so he bought it from Johnson, or maybe Johnson's descendants. I'm not sure exactly the details on that. What's his name? Carl Fisher bought this abandoned toll road from Johnson, and improved it and actually rebuilt the highway and made it a part of the Lincoln Highway, connecting a private road connecting San Francisco to Philadelphia all the way across the United States. And then it stayed in private hands as not a toll road. It was free. The whole Lincoln Highway was free. Carl Fisher was a brilliant man, and he did it with private investments. Then in 1926, guess what the federal government did? They nationalized the road system.
They took it.
And they took it. They took it and called it Highway 50.
They took it.
And you can drive over it today. It's Highway 50 through Spooner Pass.
So that's still there as... That's sad, though. They took their property.
The government stole it. That's what they do. They steal.
They took our roads.
They took our roads.
They took our roads.
You can take our roads, but they won't take our freedom. But my story's true.
You're listening to Freedom Feeds.
Well, mostly true.
Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. All Spooner, all the time, on the Freedom Fiends. So, real quick note, the real Lysander Spooner ran a, among other things, he did a lot of things, but one of the things he's noted for was competing with the United States government's mail company, mail service, and forcing them to lower their prices through competition, forcing them to give home delivery through competition, and eventually they outlawed him and wouldn't let him have his mail company. But Dan works for a private mail company, not the government.
Yes.
Right, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Royal Mail was a government company up until a few years ago when it was privatized.
I like, don't know when. But...
like, finally, because the fact of the matter is, I mean, like, they have this weird thing in Royal Mail called co-opetition, where, like, there is, like, that's what they called it for years, where, like, you deliver other companies' mail that they pay for, and it was all just a big mess. But the fact is, see, if Royal Mail had been privatized probably years and years before, we'd probably have a better, more competitive company than we do now, because you find that now that Royal Mail, because they were sort of, it took ages to actually, like, you know, they were going to do it, and then they were like, no, successive governments, we were like, we'll put it on the shelf, maybe we'll privatize it, maybe we won't, you know, and strikes and things. And when they eventually got to it, it's like, all these other companies, I've got to tell you, a lot of these other delivery companies are miles ahead of Royal Mail. And you
because
can,
of the competition factor?
Yeah, because of the competition factor. I mean, the fact is, I mean, Royal Mail have got a big hole in their pension fund just now because of government taking what they call a, and I'm doing massive air quotes, bigger than you can imagine, payment holiday from the pension fund. You know what I mean? How can you take a payment holiday from the pension fund? We didn't get to take a payment holiday, but the government did. So that's the whole fact. But it does prove that, like, you know, the fact of that is, people here especially, people are so sensitive about the whole idea of privatization.
Well,
I mean, there's campaigns calling for the rail to be privatized again.
No, not privatized.
Oh, sorry,
to
nationalized again. Sorry, nationalized again. Yeah. Sorry.
No, just speaking of government, I don't know if it's just my attitude today, but I feel a little bit sort of sick of talking about them, just because the thing is, you can go to people, like, say, for example, I go to my sister or my mum or someone, and I'll say such and such was a false flag. There's a lot of proof that this stuff happened. I can give them facts. I can give them figures. I can give them logic. And most of the time, a lot of people just look at me and go, yep, you're probably right. And they just
don't
nod.
Care.
Yeah.
And it's because nobody cares. And I would really like to just say to people, be careful how you spend your energy. Because you can spend an hour trying to convince someone that something was a terrorist attack. Sorry, that something just a black and white terrorist attack. They don't care. They just don't.
Yeah. That's the problem, because I think, I don't know what it is, if it's just that people are just like, you know, just let me, because we are kind of like that in a way. We're in a way, we're kind of like, just leave me alone and let me live my life, you know, because we're libertarians. But like, we're aware of what's going on and we actively disengage with it.
Yeah.
But like, I think it's a sort of disconnect with the other people maybe you're talking about. Mm-hmm. They don't maybe think that way. They just, instead of the, I know what's going on, but like, I'm going to move to consciously disengage with it.
Yeah.
Instead of that, it's just, I just want to ignore it and pretend it's not happening.
Yeah, let's just not talk about it kind of thing. But I don't know. So I guess Redemption, the third act, is a difficult one, I think, with this, because the way I'm feeling right now and the message, why am I here? What does why I have to say matter? It doesn't really matter just as much as anybody else. It's just my opinion, but just be careful who you spend your energies on.
Yeah.
And kind of what you put out into the world, because I don't know, I'm a believer that what you put out is what you get back, and that sounds all hippy dippy, but I don't care. I'm sort of beyond that. But I think if you're a negative kind of person that puts out a lot of negativity, that's what you'll get back.
Yeah.
So be a nice person. It's kind of, that's such an obvious thing to say. Well, one of you please jump in, because I'm rubbish. I'm just totally.
Well, it's kind of a, you know, free totally your mind kind of a thing. Don't let your mind be bound up. Don't let your mind constantly be on the negative side of all this stuff, because it'll eat your brain, you know.
It will. It will kill you internally. Yeah. So on that happy note, Ben, thank you so much for this conversation.
Don't let the government kill you. Tune back in
Don't
tomorrow.
Don't kill
more.
You.
If the government
still,
hasn't
if
killed
still
us.
Here, yeah, if they haven't got you. No, everybody just, this has been a fun show.
Yeah.
Just, it has been.
This has been a fun show.
Just chill and don't let the government eat your brain.
Yeah, don't let them take what's yours. Don't let them take your power.
You have to have a fun libertarian show like this.
If you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much, Ben. This has been fun.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.